Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier, a podcast reaching many, many of you out there. I think the last I heard from Chris Gorog is about 13,000 folks. Very exciting. We have the privilege today of having with us Mr. Matthew Gardner, who is also the Director of Security Product Marketing for Mimecast. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, how are you?
Delightful. Looks like it's clouding up here in Colorado Springs. How's the weather where you are?
I'm outside Boston, and it's a little cloudy, but, not too bad, actually.
All right, so Matthew at Mimecast is the Director of Security Program Product Marketing. What's, first of all, the overall company mission, and then talk a little bit about what your piece in the mosaic is.
Yeah, so we focus on providing what we call cyber resilience for email, so it's sort of a highfalutin term for providing security, continuity, and various archiving services for email, but as a cloud service. I specifically focus on the security angle, so it's trying to help organizations stop phishing attacks and all the various forms that they take.
Sure, cloud space has its own dynamics within the larger cybersecurity industry, for sure. Does that generate from a personal interest of yours, or what are some other things you've done across the spectrum in this discipline?
Well, from a security point of view, I started in basically 2001 doing identity management. Was at a company that sort of created the first web access management system, which we went into federated identity. Then I moved over to RSA security, where we were doing network monitoring and doing threat detection and response using deep networks, capture and investigation and analytics. And then just a couple years ago, came over to Mimecast, in large part because of, the email problem is huge and getting worse, but also the 100% cloud delivery is key for so many reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Sure enough. What have you seen in terms of the differences between focusing primarily on sort of one medium in email as compared to, say, the federation or net monitoring pieces you've touched before?
Well, I mean, for example, network monitoring is a very horizontal security control that obviously inspects everything going across the network, trying to figure out what's good and what's bad.
Right.
So, the attacks could be web-based, or they could be email if you're running your own email, or they could be, somebody sneaking data out via some other protocol that you have a port open for. So it's a very broad control, whereas email is a very deep problem, but obviously it's one messaging system, but it happens to be the messaging system that is by far the most popular for attackers, both to get into your organization as well as to get data out. And there are many reasons for that, but one of the main reasons is that email is incredibly flexible, cheap, ubiquitous, and bizarrely trusted, really, by users. So it's a way that they can get at your users directly, with a high success rate. And, as we know in the security industry, if your security controls depend on your users doing the right thing all the time, then you don't have a very effective security control.
Yeah, definitely a tough way to go. Let's take a quick moment to hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. I'm Abe Thompson here from SecureSet here in Colorado Springs, recording. My guest today is Matthew Gardner, who's the Director of Security Product Marketing for Mimecast. Matthew, you had just mentioned a bit about sort of phishing attacks and email specifically being the primary means for folks to get in and one of the easiest ways for adversaries to get in and mess with your networks. What type of statistics would you put on the problem in terms of the percentage of attacks, et cetera, as compared to other means of getting in?
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of stats. We do pretty regular primary research, both pulling data from our what we call our grid, which is basically our cloud service, as well as we work with third parties, like this company called Vance and Bourne, where we do research regularly with. If you just ask people, in a room or via survey, you're phishing. You're seeing phishing attacks like impersonation attacks, where someone's impersonating your CEO or one of your business partners. Almost always the majority of hands go up.
Wow.
If you ask them about just general phishing, how many of you have seen phishing attacks in the last 12 months? It's like almost always it's almost everybody, if not everybody, in the room.
Wow.
So it's just such a ubiquitous attack vehicle that runs the gambit between very simplistic attackers who use it in sort of a very commodity, rudimentary way, which can still be successful, to, the most sophisticated attackers that use it to get in your door through more sophisticated means, but all delivered to your front door via email.
Well, and it seems like, too, it takes away the necessity for an adversary to do all the upfront work, because it's pretty easy to get a hold of email addresses and wreak havoc, for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are all sorts of tools. Like, you don't have to wonder what someone's email address is. Every corporation posts emails, and then you quickly can learn the, first name, last name, or first initial, last name, or whatever their technique they usually use.
Right.
And then, of course, you just go on social networks and friend people with the company, and you learn about, who's the boss of who, and you go to their website and learn about who's the CEO or CFO, and, there's no shortage. You just a little bit of Googling and a few other tools online, you can find out just about everything you need to know about someone to get them to trust you, by pretending they're somebody they trust, even though, of course, you're the attacker.
Indeed. So for the broad spectrum of our audience, kind of explain what has happened in a phishing attack. What has the adversary actually done in terms of the attack?
Well, in terms of the mechanism, they've, sometimes they use, a phish to deliver some malware directly to you. So something like half of all the malware we stop in our service is some form of ransomware, and that's been true for the last year or so. So they might just deliver a malicious payload directly, or, if they're being a little bit more subtle, they might pop in a link and try to encourage you to click it. That click will take you to some fraud site where they're going to steal your credentials, hoping they're probably Active Directory credentials so they can log into your company, or they're going to do a drive-by download, or, and increasingly there's that impersonation type of attacks where they're not really trying to plant any software or get you to click a link and get your credential. What they're trying to do is get you to wire the money just directly, so sort of pretend to be your vendor, pretend to be your CEO or CFO, and say, this organization needs to get paid immediately, here's some wiring instructions, and then send it to the accounts payable department or something like that to get data, monetizable data or money directly. So it's so flexible. You can attach links, you can attach files, you can put socially engineered content in there, you can spoof senders that they trust. That's why it's so used, it's so flexible and inexpensive from an attacker's point of view.
Indeed. And it's certainly a force multiplier if you think about it in sort of a military type construct. You know, a lot less spent to have equal effect, for sure. And it sounds too, you know, as we in cybersecurity are such a layered discipline with multiple domains, you know, you've already hit on, you know, just in that little bit, you hit on, you know, social engineering on top of the phishing, and so multi-layered methods used within sort of even one attack vector.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you can be very unsophisticated and just get a Gmail account or some other free mail account, and then change your display name to be someone they might expect to get mail from, and that's it. Or you can be much more sophisticated, and you can register a domain that's similar using this stuff called Punycode, which maybe we could talk about if you want.
Sure.
And then you set up a website that looks like, if it's Office 365 or some site that you want them to think it is, and they actually go there, and for all intents and purposes, they think they're at the correct site, and you have them at that point. So, you know, it can run the gamut from an incredibly unsophisticated attack all the way to the most sophisticated, and, you know, in between.
I'd like to kind of get into some of the products that you would typically market, but before I do that, let's look at, from your perspective, especially having now been in multiple domains in the cybersecurity industry, how might you recommend folks make some changes to address this particular problem, both at the sort of individual user level, but also in the, you know, with regard to how they implement their overall security program?
Yeah, I mean, starting at the high level, just outside of any attack type like email or otherwise, you know, you get into these cliches, but they're cliches for a reason, because most organizations vary widely, or organizations vary widely on their security maturity, and, you know, you have organizations that heavily depend on IT that are not very security mature, and so, of course, that's a bad combination.
Yeah.
So, you know, in general, you know, you need to have executive buy-in that the security, you know, program is important, and that, you know, everybody in the company needs to take it seriously, and it needs to be funded and managed appropriately. But, you know, after you do that, then you need to sort of have a security team needs to be a risk team, basically, and they need to continuously assess the riskiest part of their businesses, so data or processes that would be most attractive or they'd be most vulnerable or most the business would be impacted the most if they were disrupted in any way. And then, you know, the third sort of trend that is really taking off, that, you know, I think is a way to address the security maturity gaps and the skills gap that so many organizations have, is this movement of cloud services, security services, to the cloud. You know, the vast majority of organizations can't build a security program like a top 10 bank. They just don't have the economies of scale and personnel. So the way to fill some of those skills gaps is to outsource, but outsource in the new way, outsource in the sense of, you know, increasingly putting your security services into a cloud service provider's hands.
Sure.
So, you know, you take those together, and I think you can move a security program in the right direction.
And that's you know, a substantial point. Now, if you're asking folks to do some of this new outsourcing to cloud service providers, what's a way in which they could evaluate? And I know it's not a quick thing, but what are the best ways for them to evaluate one cloud service provider over the other? In other words, they're entrusting them with a great deal, and so why should they trust one over the other?
You sort of take each security control you're used to, you know, email or web or what have you, and there's a marketplace of cloud providers now in sort of each category. And so the way, you know, first, why do you trust them? Well, I mean, like any cloud provider, they can get certified by third parties that their own security controls are effective. You can evaluate their capabilities. Just the fact that it's running up in the cloud, there's still certain capabilities that a cloud provider will do that will be comparable, at least, to what you're used to on premises. looking at some of the tests that compare the service providers in terms of their efficacy and take all that into consideration and pick the right vendor that you can afford.
These are all great things. Let's take another moment to check in with our sponsor.
Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Hello again, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier. My special guest today is Mr. Matthew Gardner, who is the Director of Security Product Marketing at Mimecast. So yeah, you've talked about ways in which to evaluate and services that are available, whether it's a testing site or it's a third-party evaluation. Could you potentially unpack for us a couple of who those entities and organizations are that do that type of work for, say, a mom and pop who's looking to move to the cloud?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the evaluations, if you're talking about ISO or SOX type 2 evaluations, there are a number of companies that do that, and they're all sort of certified as organizations that have the authority to do that on behalf of the security control that they're representing. So, any company, Mimecast included, will post, what certifications we have with a report from that third party. So just go to their websites and you can find it. In the world of efficacy testing of security systems, there are a number of vendors that do it. None of them are that large, but one I'd point to, because we just did a very in-depth one with a company called SE Labs.
Okay.
S is in Sam and E is in Elephant Labs. They just did one of the first tests of an email security system.
Wow.
Systems and their efficacy. So I would encourage people to Google that.
Yeah, that's intriguing.
Check it out.
And that's S-E, correct?
Yeah, E is an elephant, yes.
Great.
As in Sam, E is an elephant.
Excellent. So moving more specifically to kind of your day in and day out, Matthew, how would your sort of approach be in terms of marketing your products to a given customer? What are some of the types of products that you put out there and services that you provide?
Yeah, so we, as I said at the top, we focus on the cloud service that's for email, but does security, continuity, and archiving-related services, so backup and recovery, for example, in the security context. So, instead of having to, in the traditional world, you have an Exchange server that you would run, and then you would have, some sort of security system bolted on, you have some sort of failover site that you'd have to build, and you'd have some sort of archive, either for your retention or regulatory reasons, or just for your users to access their email, from years past. And you'd have to build all that yourself and manage it all yourself.
Right.
So, as I said, a lot of these things are, not surprising, moving to the cloud. So what we've done is we essentially took the traditional on-premises concept and made a full-on SaaS service that provides it. So it's a gateway, and so it inspects your inbound, outbound, and outbound mail, and an internal mail for attacks, but also archives for historical purposes, and provides an alternative MTA in the case your primary system goes down. And so that that world is really taking off in the email world. You have comparable companies like one that comes to mind is Zscaler, since they just went public, but they do that for the secure web gateway. So this movement of traditional on-premises security controls to cloud providers is really taking off. And I think the main beauty of that is that finally your sort of average organization can start to afford pretty sophisticated security controls, as opposed to having to build something that even a relatively small security team can manage more as a portfolio that they curate, but they don't have to manage, you know, every little detail, pieces of hardware, software updates, and every little configuration, et cetera.
So in this process, I imagine the service is pretty tailorable to specific needs of each of those customers, correct?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're still managing, you know, how they want the policies to be.
Sure.
What do you want blocked? You know, what different user groups do you want to behave different ways for their email? You know, they still have to curate the system, adjust their policy configurations the way they like to see them, run reports, monitor its, operation. But that's it. You know, they don't have to do anything else down the stack. Because that's, of course, all what the purpose of a SaaS service is.
Sure.
You know, you manage it as your tenant, and then everything else is taken care of by the provider.
So taking it a little bit deeper, inside of this process, is it through the existence of rule sets that are already built, or are there rule sets that you have the customers build prior to implementation, or is there a mix of the two?
Yeah, I'll give you a specific example. So, you know, there's in the security side of things, one of the attack methods is to deliver malicious software directly in an email. So, an attachment, basically, it's malicious. And so, from, there's no good reason anyone wants malware. So, it's fairly binary.
Right.
But the trick is there's no one good way to detect malware. So, people know about AV systems doing signature-based detection. They're pretty good at well-known or known malware, but they're not very good at unknown malware. So the idea behind a service like Mimecast is that we put in multiple AV engines. We have what's called static file analysis. We have behavioral sandboxing. We have threat intelligence feeds. We have all sorts of techniques and analytics that we apply in a black box, effectively, from the customer's point of view, to their inbound malware, specifically for attachments. Now, what do they have to set? In that case, not much.
Great.
Because, again, it's fairly binary. You don't want malware as an attachment. There's really no good reason for that.
Right.
But in other cases, which we perhaps get into, there are settings that the customer has to sort of dial, like how aggressive do you want to be blocking or quarantining something versus less aggressive. And so that's the false negative, false positive trade-off that we can guide them on, but ultimately it's their risk posture and their organization that they have to make the decisions for.
Sure, and it's going to have, a varying level of impact. If you're super aggressive, potentially it slows the effectiveness of your business, but if you're not aggressive enough, then you're that much more vulnerable.
Impersonations are a good example of that. Imagine a piece of malware sent by a malicious sender, but there's no malware. There's no malicious URL. It's just content. It's just asking for a wire transfer, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are indicators in such emails that indicate that it may be an impersonation. And the more indications that are in an email, the more likely it is it's an impersonation. So you can be aggressive and say, if there's just one or two indicators, let's quarantine that.
Sure.
Meaning that an administrator will review it before releasing it. But of course, the trade-off, you might quarantine something that's not malicious or not has no malicious intent. So that's something that we guide customers on, but ultimately they need to make the risk-adjusted decision. How aggressive they want to be with that control.
Well, and the bottom line is that it sounds like the traffic that's getting through is getting sufficiently interrogated before it gets anywhere. You alluded to this a little bit in terms of having, some cases where an administrator steps in, with a little bit of deference to the AI discussion. What's the man in the loop piece usually look like in this particular area of cybersecurity versus automation?
How much administration typically has to happen? So it obviously, how many administrators there are depends on the organization, but usually it's a part-time job for one or two people.
Sure.
know, we're able to serve anywhere from companies that are 25 people to organizations that have 100,000 people, but we have an awful lot of organizations that have, say, 500 to 1,000 people. So they, if you think about a typical organization with that many end users, their IT team may be 5 or 6 people, and their security team may be 0 or 1.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have, and obviously email is not the only security control they're managing, so you need to have increasingly security controls that can be managed by 1 or 2 people for the whole enterprise in the case of a 500 to 1,000 person enterprise. So
yeah,
that's how we think of it. You know, increasingly it's pre-configured for them. Obviously they could change it based on their policy preferences, but and if, where it can't be pre-configured, it's guided, and you know, and increasingly there's automation on, hey, you know, you may want to look at this because you haven't looked at it for a while, or you know, it's a different setting. You know, one of the advantages of a cloud provider is we have 30,000 customers, so we can run analytics on our customers' own configurations to
right.
see who are the outliers, you know, and then obviously we can get in contact with them and make sure that they're an outlier for a good reason.
Sure.
So it's like this joint curation between our people and the customer's own people.
Well, and that's really a neat blend, though, honestly, because then, you know, you benefit on the larger scale in terms of how you serve other customers, and then the local individual customer has a sense of confidence that they have some basic understanding of the problem and the scale of the service you provide.
Yeah, ultimately the settings are theirs, but that's like one of the you know, in quote, secrets about cloud security services is that there is incredible economies of scale.
Yeah.
And the network effect.
Yeah.
And I don't think people fully realize the need for both those things to happen, because, you know, again, if you're Citigroup and you have 100 people in your security operations center, you know, you can pretty much build everything yourself if you're doing it yourself, but they're the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah, and that's
the average organization, you know, construction company, law firm, you know, architecture firm, you know, 3 hospital chain. They just can't do that. And
right.
So the only way a business like Mimecast can both make money as well as serve customers that don't have 100 people in their security operations center is you have to have this economic model work. And the model works through, you know, economy of scale, meaning, you know, every additional customer to us is an incrementally relatively small addition in cost. So there's a lot of leverage in the model, so we can charge a reasonable rate and still make money.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which is even a little more subtle, is the network effect. So, you know, attacks, a lot of attacks originate in email because email is so popular from an attacker's point of view. And if you take a world view of email, you know, and today we're just under 31,000 customers, and we can see attacks that hit somebody, figure out either automatically or through our own security operations center personnel that it's an attack, and then spread the defenses across our whole environment, you know, the 31,000 customers sometimes within seconds.
Wow.
You know, if not that, within minutes.
And that's like they're
everyone sort of benefits from, you know, the security of everybody.
Yeah, and they're getting a real SOC almost approach, you know.
Jointly.
That's it's great perspective. So put on your forecasting hat for just a minute. What do you foresee near term in terms of the morphing of the sophisticated nature of the phishing attack?
Well, I foresee basically the impersonation attacks continuing to take off. So that's the one where there's no malware, there's no malicious URL, it's just a nicely crafted email that the user trusts, and it's very timely. You know, so they'll study the organization, figure out when they're going to pay invoices to these kinds of vendors, and then pretend to be one of those kind of vendors.
Right.
The security controls, other than Mimecast, of course, in that space are very weak, because it's not a black and white thing. It's not a, you know, malicious website, and it's not a piece of malware, which are, you know, not easy to detect, but
right.
are certainly
Sure.
And people try to defend against them through user training, which I understand is great. I understand it's a great initiative. However, the best you're going to be able to do is, you know, move it down from 20% of people clicking to 15% of people clicking. Yeah. And, you know, by then it's still too many people clicking. So
sure.
Those types of attacks, they're just so profitable that, you know, those attackers, those cyber criminals, follow the money, and they're going to go where that is. And for the foreseeable future, impersonation attacks will continue to be profitable. So I would expect, you know, continued growth in that area.
And we can still expect to hear from that crown prince in insert country that's offering us a great deal.
Yeah, and sometimes those even Nigerian ones, so to speak, ones still work. But yeah, the ones that are you see, you know, more that are more effective is, you know, they've been monitoring your email or monitoring, you know, your business activity, and they know that you have a construction project going on, and so they send you a bill from the general contractor, which, you know, for $250,000 or something like that, knowing very likely you're getting those kind of bills because, you know, the fact that you've hired a general contractor to build a public building is well known.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, they track that, they send you an invoice, and by the time you figure it out, you send it to the wrong general, in quote, general contractor, the money's long gone. So that's just, it's just such easy money that, you know, the growth there has just been really phenomenal over the last couple of years.
Indeed. Well, Matthew, unfortunately, the time is not as plentiful as the data points for discussion here. This has been fascinating for sure. I appreciate your expertise and your vision in this area, and it's good to know that we have you guys out there doing this type of work for us. We appreciate having you on the show, Matthew.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
It's been a delight. This is Abe Thompson here from SecureSet here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier. We've had the privilege of having the Director of Security Product Marketing, Mr. Matthew Gardner at Mimecast.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.